You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm joined as ever by Sid Lowe, live from a hotel room somewhere in the city of Oviedo. Hello, Sydney.
Hello, Philip. Right in the very centre of Oviedo. I'm quite excited.
Yes, you generally are when you're there. You've had a mad dash from Barcelona to Oviedo. Tomorrow you're going to the eastern coast of Castellón. You really are quite mad, but fantastic. Good work. We will discuss what you're doing maybe on another podcast this week. So if you want to hear more, why not become a patron?
Oh, I like it. That's a tremendous bit of baiting, I believe it's called.
Why not become a patron at patreon.com/TSFP. Patrons got a brand new episode of TSFP Presents More Super Seasons last week. We talked about the 1984-85 season where Terry Venables won the league with Barcelona. Plus, every week you get a Q&A pod and a bonus pod, Al's occasional paper reviews, and access to the TSFP Discord. Join us, patreon.com/TSFP. And if you sign up for annual membership, you get 10% off. And normally it's around €4 or £4 a month. So it's pretty good value if you like Spanish football. If you like Spanish football, you were probably watching some of the games on match day 15. Here are all the results from the 9 fixtures we've had so far. Friday night saw Las Palmas beat Getafe by 2-0. Then on Saturday, Girona scored twice in the last 8 minutes to come from behind and beat Valencia 2-1 at home and will continue their title push. We're 15 games in and they are still joint top of the table. Girona, absolutely extraordinary. Athletic Club beat Rayo by 4-0. A really poor performance from Rayo against a really quite good Athletic Club side. Real Madrid overcame Granada by 2-0 in a bit of a meh game at the Bernabeu because Real Madrid was so much better than Granada. It was the first game in charge for El Cacique Medina, the new manager of Granada, and it felt like they set up not to get battered. The localish derby at the El Sadar finished Osasuna 1, Real Sociedad 1. Then Sunday wasn't a fantastic period of Spanish football. We had Mallorca 0, Alaves 0, Almeria 0, Real Betis 0. Sevilla 1, Villarreal 1, before a magnificent game at Montjuic. I thoroughly enjoyed watching Barcelona 1, Atleti 0. You were there. And that's where we're going to start, Sid, because it was the big game of the weekend. What's it called?
Oh, it was called the Superduelo. I actually used this just for you. I thought you'd like it in my preview piece. I
read it.
La Liga were trying to rebrand it. I agree with you, actually. Although it was only 1-0, I thought it was pretty enjoyable. I thought there was a lot of chances. It really shouldn't have been only 1-0. It's, I suppose, kind of counter to the way that a lot of Barcelona games have been this year. That they've been reasonably good results and not particularly good games. This was a good result, obviously, for Barcelona, but not a result where I actually thought the number of goals was commensurate with the number of chances, because certainly Robert Lewandowski, had he had his shooting boots on or even his shooting head on instead of his nose, then he could have had 2 or 3. He had a couple of very, very good chances. And it was, I think it was really, really quite enjoyable. As you say, it's probably a good job because the rest of what had happened on Sunday really hadn't been very good.
No, not entirely. But there's still other stuff for us to talk about. But there's loads of talking points from this game. And not least the fact that the only goal of the game was scored by João Félix, who, of course, is on loan from Atletico Madrid. It was interesting in the build-up to this game because Antoine Griezmann gave an interview to Movistar TV here in which he was asked about, you know, what went wrong for Joao at Atletico Madrid. And he said, well, you know, he worked hard sometimes, but then you need to be consistent with this manager. And sometimes it felt like he got a bit tired and he thought maybe his future might be elsewhere. Mm-hmm. From a sort of external point of view, that actually doesn't seem like a pretty unplausible situation as to what happened at Atletico Madrid. But there are two sides to every story. And Joao came back and he said, well, I don't agree with Antoine Griezmann. And I might have done some things better, but it's not just my fault. Other people are to blame as well. Anyway, that was the preview to this game. And then Joao Felix pops up and scores and does a celebration where he jumps on the hoarding and advertising hoarding boards and holds his arms out wide. Didn't kiss the badge as he did against when he scored against Porto. And there was some suggestion or lots of discussion as to whether or not he would kiss the badge. And he said this was a celebration of spontaneous when you're in the moment. And it looked a little bit like that. The thing is, Sid, lots and lots of talk now about Joao Felix, understandably. But I feel it feels like consistency is the key here. He has to keep doing this. This is not enough. You know, kissing the badge and scoring this goal, it's not going to be enough for him to get a permanent deal at Barcelona, which is what he wants.
Well, that's exactly it. And this is, in a way, what takes us back to the pre-game discussions and also punctures the obvious and, I think, false and rather facile conclusion from this game, which is that Joao Felix proves a point, or Joao Felix proves Simeone wrong, or Joao Felix demonstrates what Atletico Madrid couldn't see. Because, of course, the point of what both Griezmann and Simeone said in the pre-game, and genuinely, by the way, you don't want to make it all about Joao Felix, but this whole thing was about Joao Felix. Mm. The whole build-up was focused on him, and we'll get onto him in a minute and what he said post-game, because it was very, very clear that was on his mind as well. So I think that's important. But let's deal with this one particular point first, which is the thrust of what Griezmann said was, he was good sometimes, but you need to be consistent. Simeone said, and actually so did Enrique Cerezo, although Cerezo was kind of a bit less pointed about it. He said, yeah, Joao may well have a great game. He's a brilliant player. He could well play well. And so what Simeone had said was, anyone can have a good game. Mm. The question is, can you do it consistently? So after a game like this, when Joao Felix is probably the best player on the pitch, certainly obviously scores the winning goal, plays very, very well, is hyperactive throughout the game, I think very, very driven by everything that had happened. Mm. And when he scores like that, the temptation to say, you see, Joao Felix was right and Simeone was wrong. But actually, no, because the whole point of Simeone's argument was, this can happen once in a while. The question is, does it happen more than once in a while? Does it happen consistently? Because bear in mind, this is Joao Felix's first goal in 9 games in the league. That's a long wait. Yes, he'd scored against Porto midweek. And yes, we know he's talented, but we all knew this anyway. And it doesn't necessarily prove Joao's point either, which Joao made this point in the build-up to the game about the styles and wanting to play a certain way and being closer to goal. And by the way, I think it's worth noting actually that when I saw that, and I must admit, I saw it after I'd read it. When I saw the TV version of that answer, I thought it was nowhere near as pointed as it seems in black and white in print. Mm. Because he doesn't actually mention Atletico. He doesn't point at Atletico. He talks about styles. He talks about what suits my game. And obviously we know that that's about Atletico. But it didn't seem to me to be a person deliberately trying to wind it up, which is the way it had come to feel. Mm. And so his point wasn't necessarily proven, because in this game, Barcelona did play better. But over the course of this season, you wouldn't necessarily say they've been significantly better than Atletico Madrid. And yet we know that what he said about the way he would like to play and the way Simeone would like to play is true. And this game doesn't really change that. It's a huge thing in itself, but it doesn't actually answer the debate, if you see what I mean.
No, it doesn't. I mean, it was a huge result for Barcelona. Had they lost
massive.
This, there were suggestions, you know, that they'd be out of the title race already. This is a chance for Atletico Madrid to really throw a marker down. And Atletico Madrid have still never won away to Barcelona in the
Amazing.
League under Simeone. It's an incredible stat, and one which continued yesterday. We want to talk about lots of other things. So, you know, we're not going to dwell on Joao Felix. Mm. We could do, because there's still a lot more we could talk about. But there are other aspects of this performance and this game that we do want to mention. Not least, the Barcelona midfield, it looked really good. And Frenkie de Jong was sensational. Yeah. And Pedri was really good. And Gundogan, and they were moving the ball quickly. And there was a speed to their play, which we haven't necessarily seen at times this season. That was really good for Barcelona. The bad thing, I would say, is Lewandowski, who... I don't know what's wrong with him, Sid. I mean, genuinely, you were there. I mean, I've seen him in the flesh as well. I just don't know what's wrong with him.
Yeah, in this game, what I would say in Lewandowski's defence is that I thought his play was okay. I thought he played reasonably well. And I think what we've seen in a lot of recent games is that he's been... he's kind of been absent. It's almost been irrelevant, you know. He just hasn't been a figure. On this occasion, I thought he did. I thought he combined quite well with Joao at times. I think there were moments when chances were... Well, there were lots of moments when chances were falling to him. And I think his overall performance... So, for example, that chance that he puts wide in the second half when he's going in the inside right channel and he cuts inside. I can't remember which defender it is he beats. And then he tries to take it on the inside with the inside of his foot to the far corner, and he puts a long way wide. It's a really bad finish. But I actually thought the way that he'd cut back in showed a kind of a calmness and an awareness that was good, that was encouraging. But his finishing was dreadful. I mean, and you know, this is a guy who is not only a finisher, but has largely defined himself by finishing and always finishing and finishing very cleanly. And you see, for example, as I've already briefly mentioned it, the header that hits him in the nose, the volley in the first half that he puts wide. Now, if that goes in and it flies into net, you would say that's a brilliant finish, because he is having to turn his body sideways on. He is having to take it on the volley. He is having to kind of swing across it side-footed. But it's the kind of volley we've seen him score loads of times. Mm. And he doesn't connect at all well with it. And that was really, really striking for me, that he would strike a ball, I'm not going to say an easy ball, but a good ball, as badly as that. And then, as I say, the one in the second half where he cuts inside and he's got a great chance and he scuffs it really badly. And I'd be worried about that. And I don't think it's entirely chance that Barcelona have taken the decision. And by the way, I don't think it was Xavi that took this decision. I think it's Deco, the sporting director. Yeah. That in the winter window, because the absence of Gavi means that they can make a signing in terms of the relaxation of the financial fair play constraints. So Victor Roque, who they'd already signed... They've accelerated his arrival at Barcelona. That is not replacing Gavi. That's a number nine.
No.
That's replacing Lewandowski. Now, I'm not saying he's going to replace him. I'm certainly not saying he's going to play ahead of him every week. But I think it's an awareness that actually we could do with something else up there. And even if Victor Roque's only real role is to remind Lewandowski that he's not guaranteed a place, and to use the old cliche, put a rocket up his arse and sort of get a reaction from him. But I don't know if it's about that. I don't know if this is permanent. I don't know if it's a one-off. I think actually, if you look at the back end of last season, he wasn't that great either. I've got quite significant doubts about him on a more permanent level. Now, that's not to say he's ever going to be terrible, because he's never going to be terrible. But is he at the very, very top anymore?
Victor Roque rocket up his ass.
Victor Roque up his ass.
Roque. Why are you pronouncing it like that?
Because I was listening to a Brazilian on the radio, and it struck me, and it made me giggle. How Roque. And I just thought, I was trying to Brazilianize, but yeah, I think it's just going to be rocket, isn't it?
I think that's probably best for everyone. But
I think it is.
But the midfield was good. Yay.
Brilliant. Really good. And actually, one of the things that Joao Felix did say after the game about the midfield, he said they're the perfect midfield. They make life much, much easier for you. They find you between you being him, obviously, between the lines, which enables him to be kind of a hybrid, not really an attacker, more an extra midfielder. The use of the ball was good. It was crisp. It was clean. And you mentioned Frenkie de Jong. And I suppose this is one of the reasons why, from a Barcelona perspective, you can be optimistic that the recovery in the second half against Porto and the performance here for about, I would say they were really good for what, 65 minutes maybe? Around about the same actually as they were in the Clásico against Real Madrid. Mm. Although I think actually they were probably better in this game than against Real Madrid in that they created more chances. And that's what allows you to be optimistic that this is a genuine change, because you can see that piece that was missing in this long run of not playing very well, and that was Frenkie de Jong. Now, I still have one or two doubts about Frenkie de Jong as the sole pivot in midfield. But of course, part of the secret to this is he's not really playing as a sole pivot now, because Gundogan is so close to him. And they're not exactly playing in parallel, but they're close to playing in parallel. And so you've got this degree of freedom with them, Pedri in front of them, but those two being a little bit closer. So it means that if De Jong does go, Gundogan will wait. If Gundogan sort of drifts into a slightly more attacking position, De Jong will wait. I think the fact that they are playing three central defenders amongst their four at the back changes that as well. And it's very interesting, by the way, Xavi pre-game was claiming that neither Araujo nor Koundé are actually playing at full-back with him. So they're playing in the centre, but they go out to the wing, which I think is a bit of a sleight of hand, to be honest. But there's an element of truth to that. There is an element of truth to that. And I think that reinforces maybe the fact that you haven't got a natural pivot if Oriol Romeo is not playing. And I think that three as a midfield is potentially very good. But I do still wonder about the lack of that actual position, that actual player there in that role.
Before we move on, 34,568 fans at Montjuic last night. The lowest attendance of the season for one of the biggest games of the season, El Superduelo. What was it like inside the stadium?
Am I allowed to be rude?
Yes.
It was rubbish.
Yeah.
In terms of TV. Genuinely, I mean, that sounds unfair. And the problem is that sometimes when you say things like that, it sounds like you're being unfair on the people who are there. But actually, it's not about the people who have gone. It's about the people who haven't gone. The 34,000 there last night as well, I would say, is a very high proportion of tourists. And there's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. And obviously, you know, a lot of our listeners will be people who go to games occasionally. I go to a lot of games occasionally, even when I'm not just working. That's not a problem. But it does change the nature of the way that group of fans responds and the atmosphere that's created and so on. And it was really, really disappointing. Now, look, there's loads of reasons. We could genuinely be here all night, and so I don't really want to get into them, but price, weather, time. I think the fact that they gave the fans the chance to opt out for a year was a mistake, although admitted it was a mistake that they couldn't avoid because there were too many season ticket holders to get them into the game. But I think having a season ticket has to have a coercive element to it. And by allowing fans to effectively opt out for a year, I think they lost that. And I think that's problematic. There are lots. Montjuic isn't a particularly great place for watching football. In fact, it's a pretty bad place for watching football. But I still think it's poor. I think it's very poor. And I think it's worrying because I think it also says something about disengagement with the club, disengagement with the team. I don't want to overplay that because I think there are other non-footballing factors. But it's a problem. That's a very, very low attendance.
It was cold last night in Barcelona, and to our British ears, Sid, that does sound absolutely ludicrous, but it was cold. It was 9 o'clock on a Sunday, and the cheapest tickets were €90 for some you know, pretty terrible seats at Montjuic.
For what it's worth, I think it might be worth pointing that out, and I know that 9 o'clock on a Sunday is now a traditional kickoff time in Spain, and no one really looks at it and says that's terrible, but 9 o'clock on Sunday is a bad time.
Yeah. Objectively speaking, it's not.
It is. Bottom line, it is a bad time, yeah.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
You were also at the Bernabeu on Saturday to see Real Madrid beat Granada 2-0. Al's put it here in the production notes. Not much to say here, but Toni Kroos has still got it. I think that's about it.
Toni Kroos was brilliant, and that is about it, to be honest. This sounds dismissive of Real Madrid, and I don't intend it to, because actually, in a way, the reason there was nothing to say was because Madrid were actually very good. But they were very good, I felt, at least, in third gear. I didn't think they needed more. And I don't think, I mean, you know, talking about a new approach from Granada, that new approach didn't transmit, to use a Spanishism, very much to me, to be honest with you.
No. Announcing today, Real Madrid, that Dani Carvajal has picked up an injury, which feels like a really, really important absentee that they're going to have. Not least because he's actually been one of the players of the season so far for Real Madrid, and he's a player who's had injury problems in the past, and we thought, oh, he's staying fit now for a consistent amount of time, and now he's going to be out for a while.
Yeah, and you're right as well. And it's not just that we thought, oh, he's fit now, is that there was a lot of discourse around the changes that he's made in terms of his diet. There's been this big obsession with his broccoli over the last few weeks, and there was this kind of idea, this is the magical cure, he'll never get injured again.
Yes.
And he is. Now, obviously, let's see what the length of the injury is, the seriousness of it, whether it recurs and so on. But he's had a lot of injury problems over his career. I hope this one isn't a bad one, because, as you say, he has been playing really, really well. I also think he's a hidden but key piece in the Real Madrid team.
Yes. Rodrigo Goes, or as you would like me to call him, Rodrigo Goes, scoring in the fifth consecutive game. And he really is in the form that Real Madrid need him to be in. Brian Diaz getting the other goal. Jude Bellingham in not scoring. Shocker. But there we go. We mentioned Girona coming back to win against Valencia. Do you know how many times they've come back this season to win a match, Sid?
I believe it's 6, but the number of points is 17, isn't it? 17 points recovered from losing positions.
Yes, and it is, yes, it's 6 times. I mean, that's...
It is 6, is it? Right.
That's a ridiculous amount. Absolutely ridiculous.
Well, do you know what? One of the things about it is as well, and I think this game was another example. Now, admittedly, the goals came very late, and admittedly, they only got 2 of them. Because you look at some of those other comebacks, they go behind, but then they score 4.
Yeah.
This time they went behind and they only scored 2, and it looks a bit epic, not least because it's Stuani and he comes on, he scores in the 82nd minute and he scores again in the 88th minute, although he doesn't officially score. Well, he does officially score, but he doesn't actually score because the referee gives him the goal when it's not actually his touch, and he's the one that says, I don't think I touched this. But anyway, so that gives it a feel of epic, but actually it didn't feel like epic. And this is a bit like some of those other comebacks. It's not epic, it's logic. They are irresistible when they start gathering momentum. The amount of people they get in the area, the amount of chances they create. You see the first goal is different, actually, to be fair. But you see the second one is a very, very classically Girona goal from what we've seen this year. In that it's a really good cross into the box, but it's not the cross, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that's the ball swung in and let's see if someone can get ahead on it. It's a pass that's come from the side. And it's hit hard, and it's hit low, and it's hit to a man. Now, admittedly, that argument falls apart a bit because it's not actually Stuani who gets to it, but it's aiming at Stuani, and he's right next to it. Mm-hmm. And so it's when they put lots of balls into the area, Girona, it is not done as... It's not done, for example, as Sevilla did this weekend. And Sevilla broke a record this weekend for the number of crosses, but that's largely aimless lumps into the penalty area. Girona are not aimless lumps.
Girona are not aimless lumps, Sid. They absolutely are not. And we're 15 games into the season now. They've got exactly the same record as Real Madrid. Played 15, won 12, drawn 2 and lost just 1. They've scored more goals than Real Madrid and indeed anybody else. And they're 10 points clear of 5th. So they are really putting themselves in a very, very strong position to claim Champions League football, although there is still a long way to go. Let's talk about Sevilla. You mentioned them there. They've drew 1-1 with Villarreal. I mean, they're in all sorts of trouble, Sevilla. It could have been a lot worse for them because Ben Brereton Diaz scored in injury time, which we thought was going to be his first goal for Villarreal. He's had a tough time. It was a really, really well-taken goal. He celebrated wildly. And then VAR disallowed it for a seemingly quite dubious foul from him during the move and scoring the goal. And Sevilla were saved a little bit. But it's still, it's a very, very difficult situation for the Andalusians. And I just wonder, how long are they going to stick with Diego Alonso? Because he has still not won a game in the league.
It's extraordinary, really. Because, you know, you don't want to put too much of the responsibility on a manager who hasn't been there for very long. But actually, it's not very long now. It's, what is it in the league? It must be 7 games in the league, maybe 8?
Yeah.
With him, I'm not sure. But it's an extraordinarily bad set of results for a team with the players that Sevilla have. Again, as I say, I'm not sure it's directly about pointing the finger at him, but if he's not the problem, he isn't showing signs of being the solution yet. Because it's not like... Do you know the other thing is, it's not even as if you look at this and you think, I can see something. Mm. I can see a change. I can see a shift, because actually, if anything, it's shifting back more towards Mendilibar. Mm. Like the number of crosses this weekend was they've done quite a lot of crosses all the way through with Diego Alonso, but it's kind of a bit closer to Mendilibar. You look, for example, at the difference between them and Villarreal, who they play this weekend. You look at Villarreal, to be honest, and you still see flaws.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see the beginning of an idea coming through. You can see that immediately. You can see a reaction of sorts. And Sevilla's situation is, I mean, it's quite difficult to fully understand.
Mm-hmm.
Because for all the problems they have, they shouldn't be quite this bad. I think there is an emotional element to do with the ownership of the club and the tension and the kind of the divide. I think that does filter through a little bit. I think it does reach players. I think it does make a difference to the atmosphere. I think it does change things. I think there are times when you could say, okay, a little bit unlucky this time. But all in all, you look at them and you just think, they are a really shockingly bad team for the collection of players they've got. And yeah. I'm not saying their players are brilliant, because they're not. But you go through that first division in Spain, and you say, would you want Jesus Navas? I think the immense majority of teams would want Jesus Navas. Would you want Ivan Rakitic? Even though he's a bit slow these days, you probably would. Would you want Nesiri? Yes. Would you want Ocampos? Yes.
Acuna?
Would you want...
Acuna, I'd have him.
Acuna, you'd want him. He's a World Cup winner.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying these guys are all brilliant, but there's five or six players there that sure as anything shouldn't be down where they are and shouldn't be performing this badly.
They did have several people missing for this game. Jesus Navas and Sergio Ramos were both suspended.
Yeah.
Soumaré, Badé, Lamela, Suso, Nyland, they were all out injured. So the team that they put out was not quite as strong as it could have been. But still, it is not a good time for Sevilla, who are... They're 15th, Sid, and if Celta win tonight, they're going to be just 2 points off the relegation zone. So it is not a good time at all for Sevilla. It is a good time for Athletic, who thrashed the mighty Rayo Vallecano 4-0. Tremendous result for them, and both Williams brothers scoring in this game in the week that Nico Williams also extended his contract, so he's going to be there. We had one or two doubts whether or not that was going to happen, but eventually put pen to paper, and we're going to have Nico Williams for a while longer, Sid.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, we had one or two doubts about it, and to be honest, we sort of still do about whether this is a contract extension that enables a departure.
No,
and I think at some point we'll, but I don't think it'll be happen. I don't think it'll happen now.
Right,
and I think that's really important. I mean, look, regular listeners will know I've got a very big soft spot for the Williams brothers for kind of everything that they are, everything, the way they behave, the way they act, the way they play, and they are both playing brilliantly. I saw a statistic the other day. I love this. You probably saw it. I think it was either Who Scored or SofaScore. It was one of the statistical websites. So the best winger in Spain is Williams. And the second best winger in Spain is Williams. And they are 1 and 2 in terms of statistical average ratings, I think it was. And they are playing brilliantly. And Iñaki in particular. And I think Ernesto Valverde has found a solution, because Iñaki's actually scoring more goals from a wider position than he was through the middle. Gudelfeta is giving them the capacity to play that game. And more Iñaki even than Nico, actually, because Gudelfeta is a centre forward who will come away from the middle and allow space for Iñaki to go into. With the goal in front of him and kind of coming in with everything opening in front of him, he seems to finish better than he did before. They are playing really, really well. And I suppose they must be looking at Girona thinking, oh, what a pity. You know, the year that we start getting it right and you think, oh, good, Sevilla is out of it this time around. Villarreal's not really in it this time around. That fourth spot could be ours, because even Real Sociedad, despite playing very well, their numbers are not quite as good as they've been in previous years. And bloody Girona turn up. But they've been very, very impressive, Athletic, in the last 5-6 weeks. There was a little lull, wasn't there, after about 4 or 5 weeks of the season, but they've turned that around now.
They have, and they're seemingly very much in the battle for top four. And in terms of scoring goals, they are the joint third best team in terms of scoring goals. So that has long been a problem for them, and seemingly they've found a way to get the best out of their front three. Before we go, we just want to mention a couple of things that have happened in Spain. We'll get to the Segunda results in just a second. But Spain's women's team were in action, Sid. On Friday night, they lost 3-2 in Pontevedra. But the result wasn't the biggest talking point, Sid.
No, I mean, it's just bizarre. They started the second half with 10 players, and it was sort of 9.5 because there's a player still doing the boots up at this point. There was some confusion at halftime, and the reason why I say some confusion is because actually the explanations given don't entirely tally. So I think it was Athenea was talking to the Mixzone post game and gave a different explanation to the one that Monse Tomé, the coach, gave. Aitana Bonmati, basically at halftime, said she didn't feel well enough to carry on. There'd been a discussion with the manager and she didn't come out the second half, but it seems that it happened too quickly for them to replace her, basically.
Yes.
Or for them to have completed the replacement. And the players warming up didn't come on. And you start the second half with 10 players and you concede. And it just looks horrendously amateurish. And doesn't look good at all. I mean, we've talked about this a little bit before, and we don't follow the women's game well enough to have a really, really good clear take on this. But it does feel like it's difficult to imagine Monse Tomé lasting very much longer, particularly now that Zubizarreta has taken over as sporting director. I suspect that will bring with it a change in coach in the, maybe not immediately, but in the not too distant future.
Mm. Okay, we had to mention that. Before we go in the Segunda, we also had to mention that there was a big 2-0 win for Oviedo over Espanyol. Congratulations.
Played really well as well, yeah.
Mighty Real Oviedo. Zaragoza beat leaders Leganés 1-0, Levante beat Valladolid 2-1, and in the game of the weekend, Racing Ferrol beat Albacete 5-4. What a cracker that was. So Leganés are first on 36 points, then it's Sporting and Valladolid on 32, and Espanyol and Racing Ferrol are on 31 points. Oviedo are 11th. This week, we've got the Copa del Rey second round, including, here's some of the choice ties, Arosa against Valencia, Andrax from the island of Mallorca against Real Sociedad, Villanovense against Betis, Atletico Astorga against Sevilla, Cayón against Athletic Club, and the one that you will be going to tomorrow, Castellón against Real Oviedo, Sydney. So
I saw all the Oviedo players, actually. I saw all of them. They walked past me in the airport. I was sitting there writing this morning, and a guy went past me in the full Oviedo tracksuit, and I thought, that's commitment for you. And then about four or five others did. I thought, actually, it's the team. There were a lot of very, very young-looking players amongst that squad, so I suspect there's going to be quite a big rotation.
I would have thought so. But there we go. Copa del Rey second round coming up this week. If you want to join us over at patreon.com/TSFE for the rest of the week, we will be providing you with top quality Spanish football content for a very, very small fee. So come and join us. And if you don't want to do that, it's all right. We'll be here as ever, every single Monday for free, wherever you get your podcast. So you can join us then. Adios.
Cheerio.